The Catholic bishops of New York State prepared a statement which is meant to help us in the important task that we have next week of electing our leaders. To vote, brothers and sisters, is an obligation. It is not an option. If we are registered voters, we have an obligation to vote. And we don't, however, just vote by throwing dice or by chance. There are principles which guide how we do it. So I'd like to read this carefully worded statement of the Catholic Bishops of New York. It says, Tuesday, November 3rd is Election Day. On that day, voters in this state and indeed the nation will determine the leadership and policies which will guide local, state, and federal governments in the years ahead. In order to vote on November 3rd, citizens must be registered. Tragically, if history is any guide, a great many eligible voters will not participate in the elective process. Many people believe there is no real difference between candidates, or that their chosen candidate is either comfortably ahead or too far behind in the polls for their vote to make any difference. Such attitudes, while understandable, are a mistake. Voting is a vitally important moral and civic responsibility. We bishops appeal to all citizens, and to Catholics in particular, to become educated on the issues and to exercise your right to vote freely and with thoughtful conviction. All of us should become informed, active, and responsible participants in the political process so that those elected in November will truly be representative of the people. As teachers and pastors, we offer the following paramount issues and questions which we have consistently raised for reflection of Catholics and of all citizens prior to Election Day. How do our local, state, and national policies safeguard and enhance human lives from the moment of their conception to the moment of natural death? Support public funding for parents in choosing their children's education. Protect basic human rights, which flow from human life, such as the right to shelter, clothing, food, work, health care, education. Defend the family and strengthen family life. Put the needs of the poor, minorities, and children first and foremost. Demonstrate that we are people of peace. Promote employment opportunities for all who are able to work. For Catholics, it is not enough for us to believe personally in the principles of justice, peace, and respect for human life. We must work for these principles by participating in the democratic process. Together we can shape the future of our society by calling attention to important moral values and by collaborating with others in support of programs reflecting those values. Together we can make a difference. We urge you to vote. May God help us to be worthy, responsible citizens and committed brothers and sisters to our neighbors in the Empire State, in the nation, and the world. This is a very important statement. You know, there are people who like to think that being a Catholic is just a matter of private religious practice. It's not. Being a Catholic means being convinced of certain things that are right and true, and then acting in such a way that we shape our society according to those truths. Because if they're true, they're true for everyone. Truth is not something that we make and fashion according to our own personal likings. Truth is not a private thing. Truth is a public thing, and it has consequences. We also should not underestimate the power of the media in manipulating us. And here we have to be very, very careful. The statement here referred to this in a certain way as well. The media has tremendous power. Television, newspaper, radio reports that we hear are supposed to inform us. Instead, what often happens is that they manipulate us. Instead of giving us necessary information for us to make our decisions, it's often the case that the media tries to make our decisions for us. And I urge you, as you participate in our democratic process by voting, that you not let this happen. That you carefully examine things for yourself, think things out for yourself based on facts and based on all the facts. And to say, I'm not going to, as this statement says very well, think that because of anything that the media might say, that my vote is not going to make a difference. It certainly is. And if we can get everyone to think that way, we'll be making some progress. Now, second point has to do with a book that I have right here, and since this is Respect Life Month, the month of October, we have been reflecting in various ways on issues about the dignity of human life. And there is a movement afoot called the euthanasia movement. And I've spoken about this here before, but certainly not anywhere near enough the attention that it deserves. Euthanasia means good death, from a Greek word. But brothers and sisters, what is meant by this term is not simply a good death. We all want a good death in the sense of peaceful and well prepared to meet the Lord and with people caring for us and, you know, that we wouldn't be alone, that we would have our loved ones around us and so on and so forth. But what the euthanasia movement means by euthanasia is the right for somebody to choose the time and the day that they're going to die and to carry it out themselves or to have someone else carry it out for them. No, this is no different from suicide. And yet there is an organized movement afoot in our society to make suicide something legitimate, to claim that we have choice in dying, to claim that we have, quote unquote, a right to die. Let us be perfectly clear, there is no such thing as a right to die. A right is a moral claim that we have on something. We do not have a claim on death. It's the other way around. Death has a claim on us. We are not the ones who decided that we would come into the world, or when we would come into the world, or where we would come into the world. That was in the hands of God, with the cooperation of our parents. We do not have absolute dominion over even our own life. Some people say, well, this is my life, I'll decide when I want to die. No, it's not just your life. It belongs to God. This book is called Final Exit. This book is subtitled The Practicalities of Self-Deliverance, that's a nice word for killing yourself, and Assisted Suicide, that's a nice term for killing someone else, for the dying. It's written by Derek Humphrey, a man who heads a group called the Hemlock Society. That ring any bells? Socrates. Remember from high school, studying about Socrates? He drank the hemlock juice to commit suicide. This is the Hemlock Society. It may seem unbelievable that there is such a group, but there is. And it's very organized, and they write books, and they propose legislation, and they give speeches, and they try to change public opinion about the acceptability of suicide. And they've made a lot more progress than most of us realize. There's other groups similar to this, such as the organization called Choice in Dying. And there are these groups not just in the United States, but throughout the world. Let me read a rather frightful quote from the beginning of this book. He talks about what happened with his wife. He starts the book by saying, "When my first wife could no longer bear the pain and deterioration of her body, she asked me to help her end her life." And then a few paragraphs later, he describes what happened. He gets the help of a doctor who gives him some pills. And then he writes, "A few weeks later, when Jean knew the time had come," how she knew that, I don't know, When she knew the time had come, she asked me for the drugs. As wrenching as it was, I had to agree. We spent the morning reminiscing about our 22 years together. Then, after dissolving the pills in some coffee, we said our last goodbyes. I watched as Jean picked up the coffee and drank it down. She barely had time to murmur, "Goodbye, my love," before falling asleep. 50 minutes later, she stopped breathing. This is sick, and this is wrong. We do not have the right to take our life. We do not have the right to consider helping someone else do it or to encourage them to do it in any way. As a matter of fact, we don't even have the right to be spreading around ideas like this in a book like this. For the sake of integrity and honesty, he does say on page 21, listen to this, he puts it in parentheses. He says, if you consider God the master of your fate, then read no further. At least this man has the consistency to admit that no believer in God can ever take this kind of a philosophy of life. Absolutely inconsistent. Either we are responsible to God or we're not. Either God is the master of our life or we're the master of our own life, and we can't have it both ways, and you can't have a society that has it both ways. Such a society will deteriorate and will crumble. And that's precisely the threat that we're facing. Now, lest you think that these are just things that are written in books, there have been a number of court cases that have supported this particular approach. There was, back in 1982, the famous Baby Doe case. Sad case. The baby was born with Down syndrome, and the parents realized that he had Down syndrome, and the doctors also said he had an esophageal problem, which prevented him from properly ingesting food. It could have been corrected by a standard, normal procedure of medical intervention. Of course, for any medical intervention, you need permission of the parents of the infant. So they asked permission, let us correct the defect in the throat so that this baby can eat and survive. And the parents said, no. Not going to give our permission. And the doctor said, why are you not going to give your permission? You don't give permission, the baby's going to die. They decided that because the baby had Down syndrome, they didn't want him to live. We don't have the right to do that, friends. Those parents don't have the right to do that. The court doesn't have the right to say that they have the right to do it. It's wrong. And yet, these things are going on. We have cases of adults which have passed the courts. Individuals such as Nancy Cruzan, who were not dying people, but who happened to have a condition which some people thought was less worthy of protection, just because they weren't able to function the same way that a perfectly healthy person functions, somebody decided, well, they shouldn't live. This is wrong. You know, we don't have to do everything that is possible to do in order to keep somebody alive. We don't have to go to all kinds of heroic measures. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking here about positively ending a person's life. Not only that, but if I have a right to die, then somebody else has the duty to help me exercise that right. And mark my words, what starts off as voluntary euthanasia, as these people are stressing, begins to become involuntary euthanasia. Because all you have to do is say, well, that's what the person would have wanted to do, but they're not competent to tell us that, so let's put their life to an end for them. That's the next logical step, and watch, it's going to happen. Yeah, there's an old saying among the Chinese, he who rides the tiger cannot dismount. We're riding the tiger when we get into this stuff. We think we're going to be able to keep it within clear, you know, neat limits, and we're not. It has a dynamic of its own, and it will, if we let it happen, take on eventually the proportions that the killing of the unborn has taken on. Can you imagine? We could be in a situation 10 or 15 years from now where we have the numbers of sick people in hospitals being put to death at 1.6 million a year, just like we have now for the numbers of preborn babies. The end of life is like the beginning of life. It requires special care. Some people say, oh, I don't want to be a burden to my family. Oh, no? Why not? Has someone told you that there's some way in this world of being self-sufficient? How can you not be a burden to someone? Do you remember the old poem, No Man is an Island? It's funny how one set of parents can raise 10 kids and take care of them. Nowadays we have the situation where 10 kids can't take care of one set of parents. Too busy. Too much of a burden. This is sick. Life is not property that we can dispose of at our discretion. Life is who we are. It's a sacred gift and it belongs to God. And unlike the wife of Derek Humphrey, who, as Humphrey says, she knew the time had come, nobody knows when the time has come for them to leave this world. And society and the value of a society, my brothers and sisters, is measured by the care it gives to the most helpless. Now, some of these people will go on to say, well, these things that we're proposing are very, very reasonable. After all, when we see an animal suffering with something that's incurable or with pain, what do? We put it to sleep. How can we be more compassionate to the animals than to one another? See, on the surface, that argument has a certain plausibility, certain attractiveness. You could see people saying, oh yeah, that's right. But there's precisely the problem. It's equating us with the animals. Say, oh, we put an animal out of its misery, so why don't we do it to people? Why don't we do it to people? Because we're more than animals, that's why. We are creatures who are called to be united with God. We are persons with freedom and dignity and understanding. We are much higher on the level of creation than the animals are. And we don't have absolute dominion over our lives in the same way that we have dominion over the animals. It's different. And there's a problem here. And the ultimate problem is precisely this: how people like this look on the human person. Connected with this, and this will be my final point, is the thing that we call living wills. Now, I gave an extensive homily on this one time, and after that I found a note in the pew from an attorney who I guess didn't have the courage to just come up to me directly and share his views. He wrote a note in the pew. Still like to know who it was. And he said, oh, what you were saying is very misleading, because there are ways of making these documents safe and not let people fall into the kind of things you were saying. Well, I'm afraid that is misleading. The fact is that you should never sign a living will, because a living will proposes an absurdity. And the absurdity is this: that you know now what kind of medical treatments you want or do not want for a future situation which you don't know. See, that's where the absurdity is. We don't even know what the medical treatments will be at some future date when we might need them. So we don't know either the disease or situation that we're going to be in, and we don't know the treatments that are going to be available to us at that time. And yet now, in this state of ignorance, we are proposing to make a decision which ones we want, which ones we don't want. That's absurd. And furthermore, it's unnecessary, because nobody's going to force us to do things for ourselves that are just not going to help. The point, however, is that the living will can be used in the opposite direction, and if we sign it, can be interpreted in such a way that when we do need some medical intervention that can help, someone will read the document and says, wait. Don't give this to them because they said they didn't want it. And then a doctor can actually be prosecuted for helping you instead of letting you die. For example, some people sign these documents thinking, oh, I don't want to be hooked up to any tubes. I don't want any artificial life-sustaining treatments. Hold on, friends. If you're in an accident someday, and your situation is such that to be on tubes for 12 hours will help you to recover and get back to a normal life after that, would you not want to be on the tubes for the 12 hours? Be careful. They say, I don't want any artificial life-sustaining treatment. And in people's minds, the impression that's created is, oh, I'm going to be on all kinds of tubes and machines for years on end. No. It might just be overnight that you need it. See, the point is, we don't know right now what we're going to need later. These are dangerous documents. And you know who promotes these documents? Hold on. These people. There's a connection. Because it's the living world that's the first step towards legitimizing things like voluntary and then later involuntary euthanasia, which is a nice word for killing. This is bad stuff. And we have to learn more about it. We have to talk more about it. And I want people in this parish who have questions about all this, who want to know more about all this, who have problems about all this, to come to me and to talk. We have got to talk. Sometimes some of the moral issues that we raise in the pulpit cause upsetment among people. Friends, then let's deal with it. If we're upset about something, that means there's something important here that has to be looked at. Let's not just say, oh, Father, don't talk about this stuff, and throw it in a closet or sweep it under a rug. That's going to solve nothing. Nothing. And I don't intend to do that, and I don't ever intend to do that. And if I did do that, my friends, I'd have to go down on my knees and I have to say, my God, I betrayed you, I betrayed my people, I betrayed my priesthood, and I betrayed my conscience. So don't think, ever, that I'm ever going to be silent about any of these things. People get upset, they're to come to me. And they're to say, A, B, C, D, here's the problem that I have with this. And some people think that I derive some kind of pleasure from talking about these graphic, ugly, horrifying things about euthanasia and about abortion. Let me tell you, I can't wait for the day when I'll never have to talk about these things again. But that day is not going to come unless we talk about them now and solve the problems. Either we are committed to Jesus Christ or we're not. There's no middle ground. Either we're committed to doing what's right and to make what's right prevail in this society, or we're not. My brothers and sisters, either we are part of the solution or we are part of the problem. And I trust God and I trust you that you want to be part of the solution. Praise be Jesus Christ.